Welcome to In the Middle. I'm Joey Block. This week, history was made. President-elect Trump won re-election, marking the first time a former president captured a second non-consecutive term since Grover Cleveland all the way back in 1892. So the question goes, how did he do it? Well, let's look into some of the numbers here. He dominated the Blue Wall states, winning Wisconsin by about a point, Michigan by almost two, and Pennsylvania by 2%. Trump also won the Sun Belt with North Carolina around 3 points and Georgia by 2 points. Out west, he flipped Nevada by 4 points and Arizona by more than 5 points as of the numbers that we're looking at right now. Trump also brought in key demographics that made that possible, such as 13% of black voters, 46% of Latinos, and 58% of Catholics, along with 51% of suburbanites, including 53% of white suburban women. And speaking of women, history is also being made with his pick for White House Chief of Staff. So this is the first official role Trump has announced publicly for his administration. We're expected to get more hints and drabs and more officially announced positions within the next few days. So we'll be watching that here on In the Middle. We'll probably be talking about it in the weeks to come. But let's talk about Chief of Staff here. Trump has selected campaign chief Susie Wiles for the job, marking the first time a woman has ever held this role. So this is the first time of all the years the White House Chief of Staff has been in an established position. A woman has never been in that job. And now that is going to change because this position does not require Senate confirmation. So all it means is Trump's got to sign off on it. He did. So she will be the one spearheading the White House staff. And Wiles is also a chief architect of Trump's reelection campaign. She was the one putting the strategy together. Who to reach out to? What states to go to? Where should the rallies be held? This was all her job to figure all this out and put the pieces together to ultimately lead to a Trump victory. So we'll see who else he picks. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has also been speculated. Tulsi Gabbard. Tom Homan, the former ICE director. He's been speculated as a possible DHS pick. Then also Tom Cotton. The rumor has it that he is out of the mix. So we'll follow all of those developments there. And a reason could that be because the Senate is pretty tight right now. But Republicans did win control of that chamber. It's about at around 53 at this point. We're still waiting for Arizona as of this recording. And we expect at this point, it looks like 53 is going to be the magic number for Republicans. They were able to gain control of the Senate by flipping West Virginia, Montana, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. They did fall short in Wisconsin, in Michigan, and in Nevada. Nevada was very tight. That was about like a percentage point or less. So that could have really gone either way. It was looking like that for a while. And the interesting note about all three of those states is Trump won those states. So there was some split ticket voting going on there, which is interesting in that regard. And the Michigan race was tight as nails. Some even speculating it could go to a recount because that's how close it was between Mike Rogers and Alisa Slotkin. Definitely a tight race. Both painting themselves as centrists in a state that is continuing to be more moderate. So that's why that one was as tight as it was. Wisconsin, there was Tammy Baldwin, the incumbent there, was running against essentially an unknown Republican candidate who gradually gained some momentum, but obviously not enough there to make the difference. And in Nevada, Sam Brown, who ran previously in the Republican primary last time around, lost to Adam Laxalt, the former attorney general for the state of Nevada. He narrowly lost to Catherine Cortez Masto. So then this time, Sam Brown launched this campaign, won the nomination, but ultimately lost to Jackie Rosen. So Republicans strike out twice there. We'll see in future elections if they're able to get one of those Senate seats. But they did capture the governor's mansion 2 years ago, and clearly it was a big part of Trump recapturing the White House. So Nevada is going to remain a key state there for sure. But something interesting, maybe what actually happened in our own backyard. In New Jersey, Congressman Andy Kim was victorious in his bid for Senate against real estate developer Curtis Bashaw, but not by as wide of a margin as expected. Let me explain this. Kim won by just 9%, outperforming Vice President Harris in the state, who at this moment in time looks like she's only going to win by 5%, which is something we have not seen since anywhere near this since 1992, when New Jersey was a swing state and Bill Clinton won the state by 3 percentage points. So that's how far we have to go back to make this comparison. And Trump is holding at a number that a Republican candidate for president has not seen in the state of New Jersey since 2004 with George W. Bush. So that has led the Senate race to obviously be more competitive than you would think. But Kim is about a percentage point higher than Harris has in the state. Well, the reason being for that is the congressman narrowly took Passaic County and Gloucester County, and both of those went for former President Trump this year. So that is a flip for him, just to give you context. This has been known as a deep blue county, but gradually we've been seeing it move more towards the Republicans' direction. We saw that 3 years ago in 2021 in the gubernatorial race, where Jack Chiarelli was able to flip that county as well. So Passaic County could be playing the factor here for sure. And for Bashaw, he underperformed Trump. Bashaw at this moment in time is about 100,000 votes under former President Trump. And we will see if that holds. There's still some counting going on in the state. We'll have to see. But right now, those two have run a campaign that a lot of people didn't expect. Although Bashaw, he was trying to warn everybody, hey, this is more competitive than people are saying out there. This is not just some throwaway race. Don't throw it away. And of course, this is after all the whole Bob Menendez stuff that went down, where the senator had to resign over all the allegations and, of course, the guilty conviction that was decided upon by a New York jury. So that obviously shook up this race in a way that people weren't expecting up until about this point last year. That's when people knew this was going to be something interesting. But not in the way people thought, because even Menendez, when he was under trouble, the last time he ran back in 2018, he won by double digits against Bob Hugin, who poured in millions and millions of his own dollars in, more than Bashaw. So the fact that it was this close is really astonishing for sure. But that's not the only thing that was close in the state. Congressional races were also closer than expected here in the Garden State, with congressional races in the 9th and 3rd districts in single digits. Give you context, those districts, and especially the way they have been gerrymandered in the redistricting process, they should be going to Democrats by double digits, and that is not happening this year. Let me explain here. Let's go through some of these results. We'll start up north in the 9th district, where Congresswoman-elect Nellie Poe narrowly carrying that district, the 9th, by just 4.5 points against Republican candidate Billy Prempe. And to give you context, this is his third run at it. And each time you kind of look at the data, he's gradually gained more and more ground here. You may recall it was closer than expected 2 years ago, too. It was around 11 points then in a district that traditionally has been won by 20, 30 points. And that was against Bill Pascrell. And now it's down to single digits. And Prempe, for his part, has not conceded the election yet. He still wants to see the full counting come in. He says he's waiting till all the ballots are counted. And he says that's going to be done by Monday based on what he's hearing. We'll have to see. But the race has been called by multiple news outlets for Poe. So that is the call we're going to stick with at the moment. Then if you head down south to the 3rd Congressional District, Herb Conaway beat out Rajesh Mohan by about only 8 points. And again, this is a race where Bob Healy, the yacht guy, you know him, the yacht developer, he poured a ton of his own money into this race last time. And people were even wondering, like, late in the game, oh, looks like there's some momentum here. He lost by double digits. That's not the case. That's not what's happening here right now. And this guy got far less funding from the GOP than other races. And in fact, Democrats originally had some outside spending going into this race, and they pulled it out because they thought Conaway had such a lead that it wasn't going to be a problem anymore. But clearly there was something there that was more than meets the eye. So clearly the Democrats did not have the night they were expecting, and the Republicans got a few surprises. And whether these will hold is the question. Whether the Republicans ultimately get the House, they flipped some key districts. I mean, even if you look for Trump, something you might not have on the bingo card for people who live on the western portion of New Jersey, you would know this, is Bucks County. Trump flipped Bucks County, a suburban county that is outside of Philadelphia. And that has been something where it's traditionally been more like Republican leaning, but in recent years it's been going Democrat very consistently. So it was not on the bingo card for many people for Trump to carry that county, which was a key part of his Pennsylvania victory. So there's that. And the question is what that means for future elections in New Jersey, and specifically these districts here. Will Republicans be able to capitalize on them? That is a question. It's an open question whether Republicans will be able to, or will history repeat itself in New Jersey, where it's a correction almost. It's almost a rebuke of the White House, where one party wins the White House 1 year and New Jersey puts the opposite party in the governor's mansion the next year. We'll be watching to see what happens there. And especially with these districts, do they get more money that is poured into it in the future? Is the 9th district going to be taken more seriously? We'll see. But if we go back to Pennsylvania, that's the point I wanted to get to, is the House, although not called yet, they have some interesting flips that they've made. For example, northeastern Pennsylvania, they flipped a congressional seat there that was based in the Poconos and Scranton. That was, a lot of Republicans weren't expecting to pick that one up, although it is an area that has been somewhat favorable to Republicans in recent years, and a large part of this campaign was the fact that they were communicating more with Hispanics and also white working class voters, which make up a large portion of this district. So the guy who won that was Robert Bresnahan. He's the Republican candidate who ousted incumbent Matt Cartwright, the Democrat. So there was that one that was done. Then Susan Wild in the district just below that, that is also in the area that's not far from the Philly suburbs there. It was Ryan McKenzie. He won there, Republican candidate against Susan Wild. So, and right on the edge there, and again, these are right on the edge of Hunterdon County and Warren County. So there is, as you know, some of these counties that border each other in neighboring states sometimes reflect similar political attitudes. So you might be able to read into that for New Jersey to see where some of these races are. And again, with Tom Kaine, he also did better than expected in his race. That was supposed to be razor thin. Remember, a lot of the polling that was released for that race, you thought it was going to be within 2 points and probably would take days to get called. No, it was actually called the same night. He got about 52% of the vote, and she was roughly knocking the door at 46. So if you put that together, that's a 6-point victory for Tom Kaine in what is considered a swing district. So clearly, a lot of numbers for the Democratic Party go through, and the Republicans, they're going to go through them too. And we'll see what outcomes that we get out of this. But specifically, here's what we're getting in the middle of this week. Well, obviously, the big news this week was the undisputed result of the presidential election. Former President Trump, now President-elect Trump, has won re-election. He will be going to the White House. The first time a former president has won re-election for 2 non-consecutive terms since Grover Cleveland. And that was the late 1800s. So it's been a long time since this happened. First time in the modern era. And the former president currently has over 300 electoral votes at the point of this recording. He won the blue wall states, which were the big ones that Vice President Harris was looking to pick up and maintain because Biden won those 4 years ago. She was hoping to hold on to those in order to get that. Also, Republicans have won Senate control. They have a majority there. We're obviously waiting to see the final numbers on that, how that's going to play out. But they picked up Ohio, a big one they were looking to pick up, West Virginia, and Montana. Now, what you might not realize here is New Jersey is actually a bit of focus. Here's why. Because that race is tighter than a lot of people expected, within the single digits. Why is that? Well, that's what we're going to dive into here for sure. But just to give you the rundown here, Trump at one point over election night going into Wednesday was at 46%, almost knocking the door at 47%. Why is that significant? Well, we have not seen that since George W. Bush in 2004. So it's been 20 years since a Republican has performed that well in New Jersey at the presidential level. And in terms of margins, it's stuff we haven't seen since 1992 when New Jersey, believe it or not, was actually a swing state because of the 1988 win by George H.W. Bush. So we're We're breaking new ground in history and some closer congressional races than you might have expected there. Let's break all of this down here. Joining me now to discuss this is New Jersey Globe editor David Wildstein and Jersey First TV's Real Talk with Fernando Uribe host and executive producer, Dr. Fernando Uribe. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having us on.
Thanks, Joey. And congrats again to you being that amazing podcaster of the year, sir. Congratulations, young man.
Thank you, Fernando. I appreciate that as always, and hope to continue the good coverage here that we try to do each and every week, including with this election here. These results are interesting for Republicans. Looking broadly here, if you look at the popular vote, for the first time in 20 years, a Republican, Donald Trump, has won that popular vote. And at the moment, it looks like he's going to win with a majority of it, too. It's not like a plurality type of thing like we saw in 2016 when Hillary Clinton won the popular vote despite Trump winning the Electoral College. But let's specifically look into New Jersey. The presidential race here in the Garden State was much closer than people expected. There was some polling that suggested it could be in single digits earlier on, but the final one showed the election having that race be at a much wider margin. David, what do you make of these presidential election results that we saw on the state?
Well, I mean, you know, first of all, we've all going to have another reckoning about polls, because every recent general election poll that matched Trump against Harris got it incredibly wrong. And I'm the first to admit I got it wrong. I didn't think Donald Trump was going to come that close. I thought this was going to be double digits. And clearly there is something going on here. And what I think makes this really interesting is neither of the candidates was playing for New Jersey. They had put this in the Democratic column, and both campaigns were using Jersey as an exporter state. They were encouraging people that it was basically the existence of the campaigns was to send people to Pennsylvania to help them there. So this is sort of this perfect storm. You know, only South Jersey people saw TV ads because they were seeing the Philly ads. If you were in the New York media market, you didn't see any of that, and your news was really you know limited to what you watched on television or heard on podcasts or any other new ways. But there was no paid campaign, and you know, basically what Kamala Harris did is she got 12 electoral votes out of 14 electoral votes out of New Jersey, and she got it basically for free. She didn't spend any money. She spent, you know, $100 million to get 15, you know, try to get 15 electoral votes in Michigan. Jersey came free. And that's what makes this so surprising, is it just, you know, I think Trump's numbers are fairly organic, and it shows that there was, you know, it wasn't just people angry at Donald Trump that think that was the only position to have. I think what you saw is people were also angry at Joe Biden and they didn't like Kamala Harris. And that's what you saw here. You know, and we can talk about demographics that were moved and regions of the state that were moved. But this is sort of like this untouched jewel. This is the way New Jersey went if nobody was forcing, without anybody forcing their hand.
Fernando, you're a Trump supporter. You might remember that former President Trump did, in fact, visit the state one time during the cycle back in May when he did a rally down in Wildwood, which I believe you were at. And he did mention that it was in play, but we really didn't see like a big ground game, like David said, or any massive infrastructure behind that. In your mind, as someone who voted for him and lives in this state, why do you think the race was so tight in a state that hasn't gone red since 1988?
I think the 45th and the soon to be 47th president, I think, banked on a strategy of getting people to sort of realize that, you know, as much as Kamala Harris wanted to fool us into thinking, well, you know, let's turn the page, you know, we remember that she's in office. And I think there was this big anxiety against Democrats nationally. We saw that in some Senate seats being flipped, obviously. That wasn't the case in New Jersey. But when I was at the rally in Wildwood in May, I mean, I could feel the energy of people there. I mean, it was easily well over 50,000 people on the beach. And I said, well, okay, we'll see. And again, I think this is more of an indictment, again, of the NJGOP. The NJGOP is going to try to take credit for this showing, and I don't think they should. I think there was a lot of grassroots efforts in New Jersey. You had some of the people that were being vilified by NJ.com and the Star Ledger recently in that report that came out. You had some people on a grassroots level really advocating for former President Trump and Senator J.D. Vance. And I think that, listen, you know, and I've said this on other shows, I've said this on my show with both of you, 12 of the last 16 years, Democrats controlled the White House. And in certain cycles, you know, they controlled both chambers of Congress. And for some reason, Democrats at the national level and the establishment media, both here in New Jersey and nationally, were trying to get you to believe that everything that's wrong with the country somehow was Donald Trump's fault. And I think people were seeing through that. And I think people saw through that, which is why the popular vote is where it's at. I think there was an awakening this week on election night. And I think people looked at it as, Kamala Harris was not having a good organic campaign. And it was hard for her to sort of kick, as they say, you know, the bad stench of Joe Biden. Joe Biden had a bad debate in June. It's a bad economic climate. I know that they want to tell you it wasn't. The recent jobs report will tell you that it is not. What I would say is that, Democrats and establishment, you know, for years, what we were hearing, Donald Trump and his supporters are Nazis, right? What did we hear for years? Deplorables going back to 2016 with Hillary Clinton, back to even Barack Obama. Oh, people that cling to their guns and Bibles. There's been this vilification, I think, of people who are conservatives and Republicans. And I think that people acted out on election night, and it showed with not just winning the popular vote, but also winning the Electoral College decisively. So now, like, the Democrats at the national level and even the establishment media can't go back to that, well, you know, a Republican won but didn't win. No, he won the popular vote. There's a mandate now for Donald Trump and J.D. Vance starting in January, and we're going to find out where they go.
Now, something to note here is one of the final rallies Trump held of this campaign was at Madison Square Garden. New Jersey is a part of the larger New York City metro area. David, did that have any influence over the final outcome in the Garden State?
I think everything had an influence in the final outcome. And Donald Trump identifies with New Jersey. He loves New Jersey. He's here. It was the summer White House in Bedminster, and he's had this fascination with playing in New Jersey, the last couple of years. But I know, and Fernando can probably speak to this, better than me, but there are a lot of Jersey people in that audience at Madison Square Garden.
Fernando, we obviously know about that rally that happened. I believe you were covering that Madison Square Garden rally. But my question you is, obviously, one, to David's point on how many Jersey people were there, but think about it more locally here, is looking at this map, if you go to an excerpt suburb area in Bergen County in New Jersey, the largest county in the entire state, Trump only trailed Harris there by single digits. Fernando, if Trump were to have held a rally at MetLife Stadium for, say, could have he possibly won the state, given what we're seeing now?
I mean, it's hard to say, but I can tell you, being at the Garden, I mean, it was electric. It was filled to capacity. I mean, there were people sitting in the aisleways. I mean, never mind, every seat was filled. And again, he only lost New York by 11 points. And again, it's a state that Joe Biden carried, I think, almost, correct me if I'm wrong, General, but I think it was like 17, 18. So, I mean, he did well in New York. I think it would have been hard. You know, it's right in the middle of NFL season, college football. it would have been difficult logistics maybe to have something at MetLife, especially in the fall with weather and everything. But I got to tell you, to David's point about the media market here with commercials. I mean, again, I'm a big NFL fan, so I go out every Sunday to watch NFL with my friends. And I can tell you that, I mean, whether it's Sunday Night Football on NBC or Fox or CBS, I mean, there were Trump and there were Trump ads considerably during NFL Sundays. And as we all know, the NFL arguably is king in the United States when it comes to sports. So, I mean, it was an audience that people were – it was reaching people, let's just say that, during this football season. I think it made a difference. And I would just say that, listen, he was smart to go to the Garden. I think there was a contingency of people in New York that came out to vote for the former president, soon to be the new president. And I just think that I'm hopeful that, you know, going into 2025, that he's going to be able to use his influence. And whoever the Republican nominee is for governor, I think has to maximize that star appeal for the president. Obviously into that race, because they're going to be behind the eight ball already. We all know sometimes that when there's a Republican president, there tends to be a Democrat governor, vice versa. For the most part in New Jersey, I know David is much more well-versed on this than I could ever be. But that tends to sort of be the trend. I think whoever the Republican nominee is in 2025 is going to have to really, really, I think, kind of not grovel to the president, but I think really ask that he come here. And if he does, would it shock anybody next summer that President Trump would be at MetLife or Prudential Center and fill that place to the capacity? I would not be surprised at all.
David, going off of Fernando's point here, looking ahead to next year, if you look at the raw vote total for former President Trump, right now he's over 1.8 million voters. If you recall from the most recent numbers released by the Department of State here in New Jersey, there are only 1.6 million registered Republicans. So that means Trump reached out beyond Republicans in the state. So this is more than every registered Republican on the voter rolls. Given that, is that momentum or a sign of something to come for next year's gubernatorial election? Or is it a wash and the Democrats are going to be able to recoup something?
Well, here's the thing that, you know, and I know your listeners aren't just New Jersey, that you have a national audience. So, you know, it's something that I think everybody should know about New Jersey. Presidential campaigns are just the opening act for a governor's race. Governor's races in New Jersey are the big deal. That's what everybody cares about. And, you know, what I'm sort of looking at is what's going to be the influence. Now that you've seen that Trump clearly appealed to unaffiliated independent voters, because not every Republican turned out to vote. Not every Republican was for Donald Trump. So he clearly broke through. And, you know, you start looking at these numbers, he won Passaic County. Donald Trump won Passaic County. A Republican has not won Passaic in a presidential race since 1988. So, and he won Atlantic County, and he won Cumberland, and he won Gloucester, and he won counties that Biden had carried last time, like Morris County. He took that back. So you have to wonder, depending upon where he is in the polls, but we know the history. The history is Republicans in New Jersey have always liked Donald Trump. They certainly like him better than Chris Christie. And that's, you know, that's in the lands of line, the one-eyed man is king, right? I mean, it's not hard to like somebody better than Chris Christie. So, but there was a poll done by Fairleigh Dickinson University in 23 when that primary was going on, and Trump in New Jersey was like 75% were for Donald Trump and not Christie. So anyway, I'm sorry, I can't ever resist an opportunity to take dig at the former governor who I don't think there's any expectation that people say, well, why doesn't he like Christie? So I do it, and I apologize, but the reality in all seriousness here is what, you know, this is going to be a president who's not afraid of taking sides in a Republican primary. So what if Donald Trump suddenly says, I'm not just coming to New Jersey in the general. I'm coming in the primary, and this is the guy that I want to be the nominee. Right now, it's hard to imagine that that wouldn't have, you know, potentially a game-changing impact on picking that nominee. And I think that's what we're all going to look for, is does he take sides? And you know, what you've seen is Jack Cittarelli, who was a no-go on Trump in 2016, and he was just sort of lukewarm in 2020, but this time Cittarelli was all in for Trump. And then you've got Bill Spadia, who has been all in for Trump since day one, and you know, when he came down the escalator in 2015. So Trump has an ability, I think. We'll see. Fernando and you, Joey, may disagree with me, but I think if Donald Trump picks sides in this race, that's a game changer. I think he may have the ability to pick the nominee.
No, I would agree with David on that. I think that if you remember leading up to the rally in Wildwood, the president appeared on Bill Spadia's morning show. And very early in the morning, I know it was sort of like a surprise guest during the, I think, 7 o'clock in the morning hour. And, you know, I'd be shocked if, based on the fact that Bill Spadia spoke at the Wildwood rally, Bill Spadia has been a staunch supporter of President Trump throughout this entire time, where, you know, Jack Cittarelli, it's been lukewarm. You know, never mind John Bramnick. I mean, John Bramnick threatened to drop out of the gubernatorial race if Donald Trump, you know, won New Jersey, which I was like, oh, wow, that'd be great for me, because I don't particularly care for John Bramnick and his vanilla campaign. But for me, I said, well, this could be something that could really benefit Bill if the president decides to come to New Jersey. You know, to echo David's point, yeah, it's well said. I think that the president could have an influence here. But again, it's, you know, Democrats still outnumber registered Republicans by a good margin. It's shrunk, obviously, but I think that Democrats are going to feel very empowered next year going into the primary. Once President Trump takes office on January 20th, we're going to see a scramble here, really. And I think also, too, let's not forget that even though Republicans maybe gained some seats in the House, don't be surprised if there's maybe an insistence by State Chairman Leroy Jones to kind of trying to convince both Representatives Gottheimer and Sherrill to not run for governor. I mean, the last thing that probably the Democrats want in New Jersey is to, you know, vacate those two seats. And who knows if you know, if they decide to run, who knows what happens to those seats. And I think that's the last thing that Democrats want after the shellacking on election night. I think that, again, they lost the Senate. I think Republicans made some gains in the House. And if that's the case, don't be surprised if maybe, you know, the bigwigs in the, you know, the power brokers here don't want Gottheimer or Sherrill to run next year. Just, you know, again, because of those circumstances. I could be wrong. I mean, I'm thinking way ahead right now. But again, one election's over. We have to start thinking about the other.
David, as Fernando mentioned, it's the biggest open secret on the planet that Gottheimer and Sherrill have been eyeing up gubernatorial runs for years now, and have even been putting ads out, even though both were running in safe districts, basically talking about their accomplishments, trying to broaden their appeal to a larger audience here. They're putting money towards it. They've both gone on record saying they're considering it and, you know, possibly could announce runs at any time really now between right now and the June primary. Is there any chance that they might reconsider those plans given the margins that we're seeing? Because they both won by some pretty healthy margins despite the other races we've seen across the state. Could we see something different happen here?
No. I mean, it's they're being coy because New Jersey has, and by the way, appropriately, not nefariously coy. They're doing the right thing. New Jersey has a gubernatorial public financing law. They match every dollar raise with $2. And if they had announced too early, it would have triggered the spending cap that comes with public financing. So they couldn't do this. It's not that they're considering running for governor. they're both running for governor. They're now in the process of looking for the right opportunity to announce their candidacy. I can't imagine that it's not going to be for both of them before the end of this year. They are both in, and they're both in until one of them realizes that they can't win. And this is one of the things I love about New Jersey is there's always an election. New Jersey has about 12 election days a year with fire commissioner and special school board and all this stuff. People are always going out to vote for something, but New Jersey specifically made a decision that they didn't want state races for governor in the legislature to be influenced by a national campaign, by it, whether it's a presidential year or a midterm year. So New Jersey is one of five states that does their elections in odd number of years. What's great for a member of Congress is they get a free pass. They get to run for governor without having to give up their congressional seat. They really have nothing to lose by giving it a try. And Gottheimer and Sherrill are major candidates. They're both very good politicians. They're proven vote getters. Both Gottheimer beat an incumbent in 2016 to get that seat in a district that Donald Trump carried in 2016, which is impressive. And Mikey Sherrill, I mean, she might as well have beaten an incumbent. She got in the race against Rodney Frelinghuysen, the chairman of the House Appropriations Committee. She raised so much money and started to take off so well that this guy dropped out of the race. He was afraid. He didn't want to go out a loser. He was frightened of a campaign. So she effectively beat him. They're both good candidates. And you've got Steve Fulop, who is putting together a really impressive grassroots operation. Steve Sweeney, who's had, as Senate president and as a labor leader, a big base in the South and across the state with blue collar building trades unions. Ross Baraka, the mayor of Newark, who is out there trying to put together a base, largely around people of color, which is a smart strategy, because if this field stays at six candidates, you only need about $150,000. I keep thinking about money in politics. That's just my Freudian slip. You only need 150,000 votes to win a primary if the Democratic electorate is split six ways. So we're early and who knows what's going to happen there. But it's a pretty good field of candidates.
I got to talk about early voting. That played a big role in this year's race. It's the first time in a presidential cycle New Jerseyans had the option to vote early in person. Registered Republicans were leading the tally for that basically until the very end, when Democrats took a narrow lead of the amount of in-person ballots that were cast. Fernando, there was also some polling suggesting if President-elect Trump told his supporters to go vote early, they would. That's according to an 1892 poll found 48% of Republicans were more likely to vote early if Trump told them to. Is that what happened here? If the Trump campaign didn't really push this aggressive early voting, vote by mail if you need to type of campaign, would we be seeing the numbers that we are right now?
No, absolutely not. And I think the former president and his team learned from 2020. When David was on my show recently, he made a very good point that this was going to be a very different election than 2020. Obviously, we were still living under the conditions of the pandemic. Voting by mail was really the only option many states had, especially here in New Jersey as well. We started seeing early voting take off in 21 here during that gubernatorial race, if I'm not mistaken. And I felt that, the Trump campaign team, his daughter-in-law, Laura Trump, and the rest of the brain trust, I think, felt like, listen, we need to push this. Republicans are notorious for, maybe not having faith in vote by mail or not having faith in early voting and wait until election day. No, that's not the case. And what we saw, not just in New Jersey, but nationally, we saw a record number of early voting totals. And I think that really put the Democrats on their heels, not just in New Jersey, but I think nationally. And you saw that where Republicans and independents, and of course Democrats too, got very motivated to vote early. But I can tell you that here in New Jersey, those numbers were very, very strong. And I think it was instrumental in helping get President Trump to within 5 points. I mean, again, I think I had said this on my show, I think, for months now. I said, listen, I think that there are pockets of New Jersey. You know, I sort of look, and David can feel free to disagree, because I mean, I know David is really good about stats like this, but I look at New Jersey very much like I look at California almost. And I have plenty of friends on the West Coast, and, you know, I visit California regularly, so I kind of know some of the demographics of the state. But, you know, yes, you know, Orange County, Encino, north of San Francisco, there's a lot of pockets of California that are very red. But at the end of the day, you look at Oakland, San Francisco, Los Angeles, San Diego, Sacramento. I mean, those big blue cities really, really monopolize the vote. And you can kind of make the argument here in New Jersey that, yes, there are pockets of New Jersey that are very red and conservative. Monmouth County, Ocean, parts of Atlantic, parts of Camden, Gloucester. Shout out to Matt Rooney, who kept us really, really up to date on what was going on in South Jersey totals. But, I mean, let's be honest, between Newark and Jersey City, Paterson, New Brunswick, Trenton, Atlantic City, Camden, I mean, these are big blue cities in New Jersey, and that's kind of like what helps Democrats across the finish line consistently. Unless I'm wrong here, but that's sort of the optic I get about New Jersey. So I think that, you know, people were smart to vote early. We saw the numbers. And I think that really contributed, once again, to this being a single-digit race. And, again, I think if Republicans are smart next year – now, again, it's very different because right now we're looking at, you know, Jack Turrelli, Bill Spadia, and John Bramnick. Again, three very different guys that have very different problems as candidates. It's not Donald Trump. And I think some Republicans might not be that energized to go vote early during a primary. I could be wrong, gentlemen, but I think, yes, it's a great tool. Republicans used it to their advantage. It's what got them close here in New Jersey. I think that was one of the reasons.
Yeah, I mean, Joey, I'll tell you, one of the things I think Republicans should do, not just the top of the ticket, not just Donald Trump and Curtis Bashaw and Tom Kaine, but even down ballot, you know, they need to sit down and write a handwritten thank you note to Phil Murphy for putting this new law into effect. This is a perfect example of be careful what you wish for. Murphy thought that this was going to, just like vote by mail, expand a Democratic base. It's had the opposite effect. Republicans, from what I anecdotally, from what I was told from candidates, from campaigns, from voters, they love early voting. 9 days of early voting, they can go when they feel like it, and now, you know, we've had a couple of years leading in, and we've had a couple, you know, these have been lean years of 21, 22, 23 of people getting used to it. Now they like it. And I think it is going to change the face of politics in New Jersey, perhaps forever. Early voting is what will, you know, and what Fernando's saying is absolutely right. Early voting for Republicans is neutralizing the Democratic advantage on vote by mail. Republicans love going early, and we saw that in the numbers. And that is absolutely, to me, one of the things that – and by the way, more early votes cast than vote by mail ballots cast in New Jersey in 2024. This thing is here to stay, and Republicans unexpectedly – I think have taken a real liking to it, and I think they're going to continue to use that to their advantage.
Fernando, real quickly here, with this early voting stuff, is that going to help candidates like Tom Kaine continue to hold on a seat? Maybe even help people who are in districts that we didn't expect to see really competitive, like Billy Prempa in the 9th district, as well as down in the 3rd district around Burlington County. Could we expect to see those places more competitive giving that toll? And maybe could it help down the road with Senate races and maybe help someone like Curtis Bashaw actually get over the finish line against a guy like Andy Kim?
Well, I think, listen, early voting made a difference with Tom Kaine's win. It certainly helped narrow the gap for Billy Prempe. Obviously, I think, I'm not sure what the number was in terms of Nelly Poe beating him. I forgot what the percentages were, but I mean, people were very energized. Again, especially after redistricting, I think he was overperforming a lot of parts of Bergen County that came out to vote for him. I think people came out and helped make it a much more competitive race than people thought. They thought, well, they figured, well, okay, with Nelly Poe in now, okay, a Latina, who knows, maybe this is going to mobilize Dems in that part of the district. But early voting certainly was beneficial to Billy. I wouldn't be shocked in 2 years if he tries again. I think that we're seeing a formula now that early voting is empowering people. And again, listen, 2 years, we'll see where we're at as a country. I mean, obviously, President Trump and Vice President Vance are going to promise certain things on this campaign trail about the economy, about how to handle illegals, about border security, about spending. We'll see. And, you know, obviously that's going to have an impact in the midterms in 26. But there's no question that early voting is going to continue, I think, to energize some Republicans. We'll see next year, obviously, right? We have, you know, legislative races. We have all 80 assembly seats. I'm not sure if early voting is going to move the needle big on those type of races, though turnouts aren't always great with those. I mean, I think David can correct me on that if I'm wrong, but those legislative races may not be as sexy as they say when it comes to early voting, but I would argue that it's a tool, and David said it perfectly. I think, you know, be careful what you ask for. As Governor Murphy said, oh, let's make this available, because now I think with the right brain trust and the right ground game and the right, you know, sort of infrastructure, I think that Republican candidates can look at this as a real serious tool to use in future races. And we'll find out. We'll see, obviously, what happens in federal races in 2 years. But I'm sure early voting can probably play a role even next year in the gubernatorial primaries, for both the Republican and Democrat parties. And of course, maybe also for the assembly races.
David, I'll let you respond to Fernando there. How do you see this impacting things going forward?
I think it's going to build from here. I think, you introduce somebody to something new. And look, we are all lifelong learners, at our core, especially those of us that are interested in politics. And there's always something new. I think if you tried to take this away, after just one election, there would be a revolt. It's not going to be presidential turnout numbers, but it makes it easy. And the other thing, and we could probably just spend hours talking about this too, which is the state of the media in New Jersey. One thing that leads to this turnout is everybody knew there was a presidential election on November 5th. This was not people coming out to the polls that typically don't ever vote. And that's not going to be the case in an odd numbered year election. And without newspapers, without media. I mean, that's why, Joey, what you do on your award-winning podcast, what Fernando does on his YouTube show, is you're reaching out to people that, you are their source of news. That's why it's so important. You are the ones that are going to be the front line providers of letting people know that an election is coming up. And you may have a preferred candidate, but the reality is all of us, regardless of where you are, and I hear this, even from the leftist media, it too is everybody wants people to vote, and you'd rather accept the it's better for democracy when more people come out. And that's just what makes what you guys are doing so incredibly valuable is you're reaching people that, the next year they may not know there's an election coming up in New Jersey, and you get to be the ones to tell them. And you're filling this void that has got to be filled with newspapers who just, I mean, God, they stuck their heads in the sand for 24 years. And then they come back out, and now that they can't understand why they failed, it's like you're trying to sell fax machines these days. So I don't, you're going to get me going, and Fernando knows how to get me going on this particular subject. But the way people receive their information is changing. And they're not going to be getting it from the Star Ledger anymore because they're going out of business on February 1st. So they're going to be getting it from Joey Block, and they're going to be getting it from Dr. Fernando Uribe on Real Talk with Fernando Uribe. They're going to be getting it from people like you who are now reaching voters in different ways. This is, you know, what you're doing is the way of the future. Early voting is the way of the future, and the two of them are probably going to meld together, and you're going to be the conduit to save democracy by getting people to vote.
Joey, if I could just echo something that David said there. I think we saw, again, there was a mandate by people on election night, but I think we've also seen a mandate by voters, to David's point about how they get information. I think that's why Elon Musk's purchase of X was so instrumental here. I think people have been developing a general mistrust of the establishment media at the national level, and especially at the state level. Because, and again, you know, I want to get David going on this. It can be very easy to do that. But what have we been learning about the Star Ledger? What have we been learning about the Jersey Journal? What have we been learning about the Bergen Record? What have we been learning about other news sites like Insider NJ, NJ Spotlight News? People have lost faith in these institutions. And you know, when people turn around and say, well, podcasters aren't real journalists. And I mean, and I always disagree defiantly. I stand up for our community consistently on my show all the time. But I think that the reason that there was a reckoning on election night is people, I think, were revolting, not just against the Democrat Party because of the way that they were viewing, you know, half of the country. But I think also, too, the way the establishment media, I think, it was being exposed how dishonest they were being. And I think if it wasn't for platforms like X, if it wasn't for platforms like YouTube, StreamYard with Facebook Live, Instagram, LinkedIn, again, it's changing the way we're consuming information. So not to say, listen, I'm very sad that newspapers, print newspapers are dying out. I'm the typical guy. I still get the post delivered to my house. I read the sports because I'm a sports nut. I read the editorials. I read the news. I read it from back to front. But again, I'm an anomaly. I used to buy papers all the time. That's not the case anymore. Everything's on your smartphone. Everything's on your tablet. It's headlines, 200 words or less. If not, you know, if you're writing a thesis, people just kind of scroll past that. That's why podcasting's taken off. That's why both audio and video, people are looking to us for information. I think that's why we bear such a responsibility that we have to be accurate. We have to be honest. We have to be transparent. If we're not, we're no better than the people that I criticize all the time, like the Star Ledger and other people. So I got to work hard at this, just like you did other podcasters as well.
Well, we'll see where the mediascape goes here in the coming years in regards to local media here in New Jersey and around the country. New Jersey Globe editor David Wildstein and Dr. Fernando Uribe, the host of Jersey First TV's Real Talk with Fernando Uribe, and he's also the executive producer of that show. Thank you both so much for joining me. Really appreciate it.
Anytime, Joey. And congrats again on the award.
Joey, thanks again. David, you're always a pleasure to talk to you, sir. And Joey, once again, congratulations, young man. Keep up the great work.
Thank you, gentlemen. Now, that's about it for me here. But in case you want to keep in touch with what's going on the show, you got to do this. You have to follow me on social media. Here's what you need to do. If you want to go on X, you're going to want to look for @Block_Joey. Again, my last name is spelled BLOCH_Joey. You can also check me out on Instagram @Joey.Block.39. Again, that is @Joey.Block.39. Now, in case you found this show for the very first time, like, oh my God, love the show, it's so great, but where do I find it? Well, here's what you need to do. You have to go to that browser of yours. You need to type in foxsportsradionewjersey.com/podcast. Again, that is foxsportsradionewjersey.com/podcast. You're going to put that in. It's going to take you right to the Fox Sports New Jersey podcast page. You're going to scroll down till you find In the Middle with Joey Block. You're going to click on that. And all the episodes will be there. You'll see the newest one at the top and the older ones at the bottom. We typically put out new episodes every Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. Thank you so much for listening. It has been a pleasure. We'll be back again next week with more In the Middle right here on Fox Sports New Jersey.